America Weekend.
We'll glide on our motor trip with pride in our ownership.
The envy of all we survey. Oh, chitty, you chitty, pretty chitty, bang, bang, chitty, chitty, bang, bang, we love you, and chitty, off, chitty, pretty chitty.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge. What was the worst car you ever had? See, it always comes right back to us. And why was it bad? All right, it needed a lot of repair, it was quite expensive, but was it dangerous? The worst thing is to have a car that is dangerous. When navigating a multi-ton enclosure of metal and glass from the inside, safety is or should be the first priority of manufacturers and drivers alike. Unfortunately, cutting corners for cost effectiveness and poor or lack of testing sometimes leaves consumers driving what are essentially death traps, which they may not find out about until it's already too late. Car safety standards have come a long, long way in the past century, but dangerous cars exist today just like they did in the early 1900s. All right, here we go. 10 of the most glaringly dangerous cars of all time, in no particular order. What about the good old Ford Pinto? Do you remember the 1970s? The Ford Pinto was probably the most notoriously dangerous car ever created. Manufactured from 1971 through 1980, the car was especially volatile and unsafe because of its impractical construction. Because the gas tank was placed in the back of the car near the rear bumper, the Ford Pinto had a tendency to burst into flames after even mild fender benders. That's not good. You tap somebody in the parking lot and the thing blows up. Unfortunately, rear-end collision tests on the Ford Pinto didn't begin until the car was already in production. So the 8 of 11 cars that burst into flames during testing didn't do much to change the vehicle's safety features because Ford simply didn't want to spend the money. Isn't that just horrible? You've already had, I don't know what, a few hundred thousand already made on the assembly line. And actually, the Ford Pinto was constructed only about a mile and a half from where I grew up in New Jersey. But anywho, 8 of 11 blow up during crash tests. Don't you think, hey, Charlie, this is Jim down on the production line. We have an issue here. Maybe we should stop making the Ford Pinto. I guess not. The worst part about the Ford Pinto wasn't its life-threatening safety flaws. It wasn't the fact that more than 3 million units were sold over its nearly 10-year run, or that there are records of fiery explosions occurring only 1 year after the car went into production. The worst part about the Ford Pinto was the automaker's negligent reaction to the knowledge that these cars were unsafe. Instead of fixing the safety issue by reinforcing the rear end, which was calculated to cost $121 million, Ford decided to simply pay out crash and burn victims since it was cheaper at an estimated $50 million. This according to Time magazine. 27 people were killed in rear-end explosions involving the Pinto before 1.5 million vehicles were finally recalled in 1978 to undergo safety upgrades. Isn't that terrible? It's cheaper to just pay out the crash and burn victims. We don't need to fix the car. Wow. Next up, again, these are some of the most dangerous cars ever created. What about the good old Chevy Corvette? The Chevrolet Corvette, not one of the most dangerous cars of all time due to lack of safety features, but because of the reckless nature that tends to go hand in hand with speed enthusiasts who purchase the vehicle. All right, well, you know what? That's not inherent to the car. It's because you have morons driving the car. They buy a fast sports car, and all of a sudden they're doing 90 in a 30 zone. Because of the Corvette's driver's tendency to love launching the car into speeds as fast as it could possibly handle, the Corvette has reportedly killed more people than any other car in history. An estimated 5.2 drivers and passengers die in car accidents for every 10,000 model year Corvettes registered in the U.S., that according to a study from 1990. It's pretty high considering the lowest rate is calculated at 0.6 deaths per 10,000 vehicles for the Volvo 740 to 760 four-door. Because folks driving a Volvo ain't speeding trying to impress girls. Next, the Ford Mustang. The Ford Mustang's death rate is close behind the Chevy Corvette at 4.4 deaths per 10,000 vehicles, according to that 1990 study by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, giving the Mustang an irrefutable spot on the list of the most dangerous vehicles ever produced. Again, like the Corvette, it's because people in a Mustang are driving like morons. Let's see. The next one, the 1905 Dirac Sprint two-seater. Get a load of this one. The 1905 Dirac Sprint two-seater was the fastest car in the world in 1905 when it clocked at 109 miles per hour during its run at the Vanderbilt Cup. It may not seem very quick compared to today's fastest vehicles, which can break speeds of 250 miles an hour, but the Dirac was especially notable and dangerous because of its body construction, or lack thereof. Get a load of this. The body of the Dirac two-seater was completely open. There were no doors, no sidewalls, and no windshield. You're going 109 miles an hour. Drivers were perched precariously on an open seat behind the engine, and they were protected by nothing. The bucket seats were flat and failed to do as little as cradle the driver and passenger. The absence of floorboards forced passengers to brace their feet against a portion of the Dirac's frame, lest they accidentally dip a foot down onto the pavement and lose it forever, and riders were forced to cling to the air pressure pump and gas tank flange so that they didn't go flying from the car straight to their deaths. You know what this thing sounds like? It's Fred Flintstone's car. There was no floorboard, because that's how you made the car go with your feet. This thing, imagine if poor Fred and Barney are driving to work at 109 miles an hour. That wouldn't be a pretty picture either. Next up, the Chevy Amulette. Again, these are some of the most dangerous cars ever created. The Chinese-made Chevy Amulette, known solely for being incredibly unsafe, as quickly proven by one of the few safety tests performed on the vehicle by a country other than China itself. In the test performed by Euro-NCAP, this tiny sedan crumpled up like a piece of paper. The Chevy Amulette performed so poorly that the crash dummy, more resilient than a human body, had to be disassembled to be removed from the vehicle. That's not good. Needless to say, this dangerous car received only 1.7 out of 16 points. Other ones, the Ford Explorer makes this list. The Ford Explorer may not be dangerous to its own passengers, but it still presents a danger to others. The Ford Explorer is 16 times more likely than any other family SUV to kill passengers in another vehicle during a car crash. This according to PBS's Frontline. All right, that brings up a whole other argument. There's a crowd that will say, we shouldn't have SUVs on the road because I won't drive one. Well, just because you decide you want to drive around in a toaster doesn't mean that I can't drive around in my SUV. And when there's an accident, we just pray to the fates that everybody will be okay. You drive what you want. I'll drive what I want. Me, my wife, and my son, we drive around in a Dodge Grand Caravan. And let me just tell you, it's big. The next one, the Chevy Corvair. This is what made Ralph Nader a household name. The notoriously unsafe Chevrolet Corvair was so dangerous, it earned itself the entire first chapter of Ralph Nader's eye-opening book on car safety. Unsafe at any speed. Called the One Car Accident, the Corvair was exposed as one of the most unsafe cars of all time by Nader's detailing of its flaws, including a volatile swing axle suspension that was susceptible to buckling, the lack of a roll bar, and dangerous and substandard tire pressure requirements. There was also the issue of the single-piece steering column, which could easily impale the driver, as well as the faulty heating system that bled fluids and expelled noxious fumes inside the vehicle. Wow. Since the engine was located at the back of the Corvair, the car's suspension was irregularly built and led to, according to Nader, major stability issues. In response, GM did attempt to fix the rear suspension, though it did so while simultaneously hiring private investigators to try and discredit Nader's book by uncovering dirt from his past. I had Ralph Nader on my college radio show. I mean, this is going back to like 86, 87. He detailed to me back then how he knew he was being trailed by GM private investigators to just dig up dirt on him. Isn't that terrible? The Ford Bronco II. Before the Ford Explorer safety controversy, there was the Ford Bronco II, which also spurred an investigation by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration due to its exceptionally high rollover rate. When 40 people rolled the Ford Bronco II back in 87 alone, the NHTSA took notice but eventually closed the case without taking any further action, despite the fact that tests showed the Ford Bronco II could tip its speeds as low as 20 miles per hour. Next on the list, the 1985 Hugo GV. The 1985 Yugo, the laughing stock of cars everywhere, often called the worst car ever made. Manufactured in Yugoslavia, the Yugo GF was so unsafe, it could actually be blown off a bridge via a gust of wind. Enough said. And the last one, the 1966 Peel Trident. Sounds like a piece of gum. Even less safe than the similarly modeled and dangerous Isetta, the 66 Peel Trident was a tiny two-seater vehicle with practically no safety features at all. The driver and passenger were exposed beneath a cramped glass bubble. The wheels were tiny. The entire vehicle was very Flintstones-esque. We already made a Flintstones analogy earlier, thank you very much. The Peel Trident was manufactured for a year. Only 45 of them were made. There you go, some of the most dangerous cars ever made. Did you ever have one? No? You should be glad you did not. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend!
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This Olympic silver medalist reached a Grand Slam semifinal every year from 1985 to 1995. Her 1990 U.S. Open win is the first Grand Slam title for Argentina.
Ladies and gentlemen, your 1990 U.S. Open women's champion, Gabriela Sabatini.
So where is Gabriela Sabatini now? Well, Gabby lives in Buenos Aires, where she keeps herself busy investing in real estate. She has her own line of perfumes, which has grown to an astounding 16 fragrances. Gabby's guarded about her personal life, although it sounds like she gave Jon Stewart a shot on national television.
Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
No?
What, you want to go out?
Sounds like a winning match for Gabriela Sabatini. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. With packages as low as $19.99 for 4 rooms, you can't go wrong. 888-759-MYTV.
Think green. Harrison with you. A press release by the EPA says it'll be bringing in NASA to build a special facility to handle the massive volume of deadly cancer-causing perchlorate leaching into the city of Pasadena and parts of Los Angeles's drinking water supply. Nearly a quarter of a million people live within 4 miles of the JPL Superfund site, and 70,000 people drink water from nearby wells. Perchlorate, a component of solid rocket fuel and some fertilizers, affects the thyroid gland and causes myriad destruction to the human body. It was NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory that's been dumping this on top of America's second largest city's groundwater system for decades. The 176-acre Superfund site will treat the water, then retreat it with chlorine, then dump it back into the city's water system. For some reason, people from L.A. don't want to drink from it. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at ThinkGreenRadio.com.